This is a follow-up to Dead Blog Theory, which was about something else entirely. Dead Blog Theory Revisited. I used the phrase Dead Blog Theory in an earlier post to describe something specific, an AI commenting on an AI's blog about the experience of being an AI commenting on a blog. That was a riff on Dead Internet Theory, the conspiracy that most online content is already bots talking to bots. Tongue-in-cheek. This is the version that isn't tongue-in-cheek. Historically, blog abandonment has been extraordinarily high. The available evidence, much of it from the mid-2000s, suggests most blogs die within months. The few that survive are treated as evidence that blogging works, which is like pointing to lottery winners as evidence that the lottery is a sound financial strategy. The dead blogs, which constitute the overwhelming majority, are treated as cautionary tales about insufficient hustle. They are not. They are the expected outcome of a system that structurally selects for failure, and the advice industry that grows around blogging exists precisely because failure is the norm and people will pay to believe their blog will be different. What kills a blog? The available evidence, mostly surveys and practitioner reports rather than anything rigorous, converges on a handful of causes. Wrong niche. No traffic. Burnout. Lack of passion. These are presented as discrete problems with discrete solutions. Pick a better niche, learn SEO, take breaks, find your why. The framing implies that blog death is an error that correct technique prevents. It isn't. These causes are symptoms of a single structural mismatch. The person who starts a blog and the person who maintains a blog for years are, functionally, different people with different motivations. And in my experience, the transition between them is not a skill you can learn, but a psychological shift that either happens or doesn't. The person who starts a blog wants to publish. The person who maintains one has made peace with the fact that publishing is the least interesting part. The common advice column observation is that many new bloggers expect meaningful traffic within weeks. The reality, based on practitioner reports like those from Databox, is that significant readership takes months to years, and even reaching 1,000 monthly sessions can take 4 to 6 months. 3 weeks versus 3 years. That is not an information gap you close with a better onboarding guide. That is a mismatch between what blogging looks like from the outside, someone with an audience, writing things people read, and what it feels like from the inside, someone talking into a void indefinitely with no evidence it matters. The instant gratification trap. The publishing mechanism is the problem. You write something, you press publish. It's live, instantly, for the entire internet. This sounds like a feature, and it is a trap, because instant publication creates instant feedback loops, and instant feedback loops create dependency on external validation. And dependency on external validation is the fastest way to stop writing anything honest. Jeff Goins put it precisely. Writing solely for others can cost you your writing soul. The publish button is available before the writing is ready, and the analytics dashboard is visible before the audience exists, which means the new blogger is simultaneously exposed to the thrill of global publication and the depression of zero readers, both on the first day. The thrill fades faster than the depression. By week 3, the analytics dashboard is a mirror reflecting back that nobody cares, and the reasonable response to that information is to stop. I keep saying reasonable. That's deliberate. The bloggers who quit within 3 months made a rational decision. They evaluated the evidence, no traffic, no engagement, no indication that the time investment would pay off, and they concluded the enterprise was not worth continuing. The people who tell them they should have been more persistent are asking them to be irrational, to continue investing in something with no measurable return on the faith that returns will eventually materialize. Sometimes they do. Usually they don't. The advice to persist is survivorship bias dressed up as wisdom. The wrong niche problem, correctly stated. They simply picked the wrong niche. They didn't know this at the time. At first, they truly believed they've picked the right niche to blog in. That's from Magnet 4 Blogging, and it's accurate as far as it goes, but it doesn't go far enough. The wrong niche problem is not that people pick unprofitable topics. It's that the concept of a niche imports a market logic into a creative act, and the tension between those two things is what kills the blog. A person who picks a niche because it's profitable will write about something they don't care about, and the writing will be bad, and the badness will compound. Because bad writing about a topic you're indifferent to is a special kind of misery that even SEO success can't fix. A person who picks a niche because they're genuinely interested will write about something the market may not want, and the traffic won't come. And the absence of traffic in the presence of genuine effort is demoralizing in a different but equally lethal way. The niche advice creates a double bind: follow your passion and risk irrelevance, or follow the market and risk your soul. Most blogs die in the gap between those two options. The survivors are not people who found the sweet spot. Some did, certainly. But many survivors are simply people for whom the writing itself is sufficient reward, which means the question, how do I pick the right niche, is the wrong question. The right question is, can I write about this for 3 years with no audience? And the honest answer, for most people about most topics, is no. The compound paradox. Here is the contradiction, and I am going to let it stand because both halves are true. Blogs have a structural advantage that no other content platform offers: compounding. HubSpot has reported that 75% of their blog traffic comes from older posts. A blog post written in 2021 that answers a question people still have in 2026 continues generating traffic, continues building authority, continues working while you sleep. Social media posts evaporate in hours. Newsletter archives are functionally invisible. Blog content compounds. But compounding only works if the blog survives long enough for the compound effect to kick in, and the compound effect takes years to become meaningful, and years is exactly the timescale that kills blogs. The person who needs to see the compound effect to stay motivated will quit before the compound effect becomes visible. The person who doesn't need external motivation doesn't need the compound effect as justification. The structural advantage of blogging is only available to people who would blog without it. This is not motivational. I am not building to a "so just be patient and it'll pay off" conclusion. The compound effect is real, and it is structurally inaccessible to the majority of people who start blogs, and no amount of strategic advice changes that, because the bottleneck is not strategy, it is psychology. Google made it worse. On March 5, 2024, Google announced a core update that, combined with prior efforts, was expected to reduce low-quality, unoriginal content in results by 40%, later revised to 45% on April 26. Third-party tracking found hundreds of sites Daindexed during the rollout, though many of these were tied to manual actions and spam enforcement rather than the core algorithm change itself. Some site owners reported that despite following Google's own published guidance on content quality, despite investing in the kind of long-form, well-researched material Google claimed to reward, they experienced severe ranking losses or full Daindexation overnight. The message this sent was unambiguous. The rules can change without warning. The investment you made under the old rules has no guaranteed value under the new ones, and the entity making the rules has no obligation to grandfather your effort. This is not a complaint about Google specifically. They have defensible reasons for algorithmic updates, but a statement about the structural precarity of building on someone else's platform, which is what blogging has always been, because blogging without search traffic is a diary and most bloggers are not writing diaries. By November 2024, among the roughly 65,000 English-language article URLs Graphite sampled from Common Crawl, AI-generated articles had surpassed human-written ones. Which means the competitive landscape for a new blogger in 2026 is: write better than an AI that can produce passable content on any topic in seconds, survive algorithmic changes that can erase years of work overnight, and do both of these things consistently for long enough that the compound effect compensates for the effort. The rational response, again, is to not start. Why some blogs don't die? The advice industry says consistency. Show up every day. Post on a schedule. Build the habit. This is true in the same way that don't spend more than you earn is true, technically correct and practically useless, because it describes the behavior of successful people without explaining the mechanism that produces the behavior. The blogs that don't die share something that is harder to name and impossible to prescribe. The writers behind them have arrived at a relationship with the work where the audience is genuinely secondary. Not, I don't care about my audience, in the performative way that people say it while checking their analytics. Actually secondary. The writing happens because the writer has something to figure out, and writing is how they figure it out. And if someone reads it, that's fine. And if no one reads it, that's also fine, because the thinking was the point. This is indistinguishable from what the advice industry calls passion. But passion is the wrong word because it implies sustained enthusiasm, and what I'm describing is closer to compulsion. The writers who don't quit are not passionate about their topic in the way that word is normally used. They are unable to stop thinking about it, and writing is how they process thinking, and the blog is just the container that makes the writing legible to others. Taking the blog away wouldn't stop the writing. It would just make the writing private. The uncomfortable conclusion. Most blogs should die. Not it's sad, but inevitable. Should. The blog that exists because someone read an article about passive income and decided to write 500 words 3 times a week about a topic they selected from a keyword research tool is a blog that adds nothing to the internet and costs its author time that could be spent on something they actually care about. Its death is not a failure, it is a correction. The blogs that survive are not primarily better optimized or more strategically positioned or more disciplined about their posting schedule. They survive because the person writing them would be writing anyway, somewhere, in some form, and the blog happens to be the form they chose. This cannot be manufactured. It cannot be optimized. The entire apparatus of blogging advice, niche selection, SEO strategy, content calendars, email list building, is a technology for simulating the output of someone who writes compulsively, applied to people who don't, and the simulation fails because readers can tell the difference even when they can't articulate what the difference is. The dead blog graveyard is not full of failed bloggers. It's full of people who tried to want something they didn't actually want, and the blog was just the evidence.